The title of tonight's sermon is What Good is God? I wonder if you remember the song. Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friend, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is... Who sang it? Miss Peggy Lee. I'll read just a couple of the stanzas from the song. And when I was 12 years old, my daddy took me to a circus, the greatest show on earth. There were clowns and elephants and dancing bears, and a beautiful lady in pink tights flew high above our heads. And as I sat there watching, I had this feeling that something was missing. I don't know what. When it was over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a circus? And then I fell in love with the most wonderful boy in the world. We would take long walks by the river or just sit for hours gazing into each other's eyes. We were so very much in love. Then one day he went away and I thought I'd die, but I didn't. And when I didn't, I said to myself, is that all there is to love? Is that all there is? And so on. It's clear to me that this song was written before today's wide range of antidepressants. It was a Grammy Award for the Best Contemporary Vocal Performance in 1969. But the song is powerful and important, and the question hangs, is that all there is? And if that's all there is, then indeed, let's keep dancing, break out the booze, and maybe other chemical stimulants, and have a ball. I think the song's writer, Jerry Lieber, Jewish of course, had it exactly correct. If there's no greater reality, if there is no deeper source of meaning in the world, if we are only a biological, chemical, scientific reality, then hedonism, dancing, booze, and more, is a logical result, and death, the final disappointment. In fact, if that's all there is, then it makes no difference if you live one day, 10 years, 16 years, 21 years, 58 years, 85 years, or the proverbial till 120. If that's all there is, then your good works, your loves, the art of Rembrandt, the music of Mozart, the literature of Shakespeare, your parents, your children, your grandchildren, have no meaning. After all, your death, after the deaths of all of these self-conscious organic hydrocarbons on this insignificant planet orbiting an insignificant star, means in the final analysis nothing. So my beliefs about God and the question of believing in God. The question is not about existence in a scientific sense. I don't believe that this pencil exists. I know it exists. Faith is not the same as knowledge. I think I can prove that there is no proof of God. If someone could prove that God exists in the scientific sense, someone would have done it by now. There are things that we don't question. We don't question that the earth is flat. Yes, I know there's a flat earth society, but even they don't take themselves seriously. We've proved that the earth is spherical. I believe in God. I have faith that there is a God, but I don't have scientific certainty. I believe, in fact, that God wants us to have this kind of doubt. Those of you who studied with me know I often talk about what I call the police car example. If you're driving down the freeway at the new regulation speed limit of 72.5 miles an hour, and you find you're slowly overtaking a highway patrol car, what do? You slow down. Because you know if you speed past, you're going to get a ticket. So too, if we were certain of God's existence, I think we would lose free will. If we were certain of God's existence, it would be like driving with the highway patrol officer in your back seat. You would never violate the rules because you'd be certain of punishment. But free will is an important part of what we understand in Judaism. God's most significant gift to us is free will. The key question is not whether you believe in God, but how does this belief change you? As Rabbi Kushner teaches us in a book called Who Needs God, Rabbi Harold Kushner, For the religious mind and soul, the issue has never been the existence of God, but the importance of God. I often think about the North Pole example. If I asked how many people believe in the North Pole, everyone would raise their hands. Yes, I believe in the North Pole. But the question is, does that belief affect your life? Probably not much. So people may say they believe in God, but the question is, how does that belief affect your life? As Rabbi David Wolpe put it, to see the hand of God and yet leave one's daily life unaffected by that perception is the greatest blasphemy. To deny is not so grievous as to ignore. So in spite of my scientific doubts, I have a powerful, passionate relationship with God. I laugh with God, I cry, I complain, I whine, I get angry, I am grateful. God and I, we have our ups and downs. But isn't this true of any serious, deep relationship? As a result, my life is richer, more beautiful, and I think I might have even helped a few other people along the way. But where is God? God, where have you been lately? You know, most people give very little serious thought to this question. We set up a childish view of God, the old man in the sky, the granter of wishes, the insurer of fair results and justice, protector of humanity, and then we reject it and disprove it. God, it turns out, is not Santa Claus. Big surprise. We don't have control over God. Big surprise. I often talk about the difference between magic and mystic. In the world of magic, you do some strange things, mumbo-jumbo. You might pray a certain way. You might wrap strange garments around your hands. You might wear strange little head coverings. You might put a talus on. You might speak Hebrew. You might eat strictly kosher. If you have a magical belief about all of these things, you believe that by doing those things, you control God. The mystic sounds similar, but there's a big difference. You do the same set of things. But the idea is, if you do all of those things, you might get God to control you, rather than you controlling God. We can't completely understand God. Big surprise. Would God really be God if you and I could completely wrap our finite human minds around the Holy One? There's a Hasidic story that they tell of a little girl going and crying to her grandfather, the rabbi. And he says, you know, what's wrong, Mamala? And she says, well, I was playing hide and seek with the kids and I found a really great place to hide. But it was so good that after a while they gave up and they stopped trying to find me. And I was just all alone. And the rabbi, her grandfather, Hazeda, responds, I wonder if this is how God feels. He threatened that if we abandoned his ways, he would hide his face from us and deprive us of his presence. I wonder if God has managed to hide from us so successfully that we've given up looking for him and have gone off in other directions. And I wonder if God feels lonely and abandoned. I think of God, big surprise, Avinu Malkeinu, which we will be chanting shortly, in a parental way. And I think about our history in our relationship with God as a people, kind of like a growing child. When we are infants, our parents work miracles for us. We're heading towards danger, we're lifted, we're flying, we're put into a comfortable little crib, there's a mobile plane around us, little birds flying around, we have a warm bottle in our mouth, our clothing has changed. It's a miracle. This is true also for us in our spiritual infancy. When we were spiritual infants, God took us on angels' wings out of the land of Egypt. God split the sea. God gave us manna in the desert. We were spiritual infants, and the workings of God indeed seemed like a miracle. As the child grows a little bit, becomes a toddler, parents still don't explain, they command. They say, don't play in the street, you'll get hit by a car. They don't say, if you play in the street, there's a 10% chance a car will come along, a 5% chance he won't see you, and leading to a 0.5% chance that you might get hit by a car. No. Parent makes it very simple. Don't play in the street. You'll get hit by a car. The Torah makes it very simple to a Israel that's growing now and as a toddler. If you do the commandments, good things will happen to you. If you don't do the commandments, horrible things will happen to you. The only problem with that is it's clear that it's not true. As we get older, the arguments get a little more nuanced. Our children now are juveniles. Parents try to explain, but often it comes down to, because I'm your father, that's why. So once again, in the book of Job, Job and his friends question God's justice. And in the final analysis, God says, I'm God and you're not. But it's not quite that simple. And as adult parents of adult children, we can't quite work the miracles that we would love to work in our child's lives, although some of us write a check every now and again. But our kids know that we don't have unlimited power, but I believe there is still great value in the relationship. Maybe at this stage, more than at other times, our children can appreciate the value of our teachings. And so in these times in our world, God is like the parent of an adult child. If the relationship is sound, it can be comforting, loving, instructive, inspiring, and helpful. And then we have the horrible problem of theodicy. How can a loving, all-powerful, all-just, all-good God allow bad things to happen to good people? I, for one, don't believe that God controls the second-to-second workings of the world. God grants us free will. People often ask me, Rabbi, where was God at Auschwitz? To which my response is, it's the wrong question. The question is, where was humanity at Auschwitz? But God also doesn't have the power to intervene in natural events. If some idiot shoots a bullet in the air, the path of the bullet is determined by my new career, rabbinics, rather than my old career. It's determined by my old career, physics, rather than my new career, rabbinics. The bullet isn't swayed to hit a horrible person rather than hit a righteous person. God is present not in the miracles that alter physics and biology, but in miracles of human spiritual strength and insight to discover cures to disease, to find ways of tracking hurricanes, to building structures that can withstand earthquakes, to gather people together to support one another in times of crisis. So here's the problem. If I can't prove that God exists, and if the God I believe in is not all-powerful, if this God is distant and can't work miracles for me and for us, what good is God? I'll try to respond. By the way, in Yom Kippur, I'll be addressing the question of what good is prayer and what good is religion. What good is God? God gives meaning to our lives. We are not just a random biochemical accident, but God's partner in the continuing perfection of the creation of the universe. The mitzvot, the commandments, have in Jewish tradition cosmological significance, even when no one sees it. Your good deeds count. The Kabbalists believe that our role is like playing a unique piece of a puzzle. If we don't participate by carefully, lovingly fitting our piece of the puzzle in place, who will? Your piece may be art, humor, teaching, healing, loving, inspiring, encouraging, discovering, recovering, renewing. Our tradition teaches, don't despair that you're not like, say, Einstein. If you were Einstein, who would be you? Who would have your piece of the puzzle? Often by looking only at your piece of the puzzle, you can't see the significance of how it fits into the overall work of art, how it fits together. You may never know the significance of the role that you fill. But we are taught most often that we don't know the purpose of our particular puzzle piece, where it fit, and who it helped. What good is God? God elevates spirituality, the spirituality of responsibility. People often tell me, I don't believe in God or religion, but I'm a very spiritual person. All too often, this individual might be following what sometimes is called New Age spirituality. And it might mean that these people can have wonderful moments of awe and connection with nature, the cosmos, the earth, particularly here in the beauty of Ohio. But my question, Judaism's question, is what then? One time, some members of a family told me this. I don't believe in God or religion, but I'm a spiritual person. It was as they were approaching the funeral for their mom. It was a family who was almost completely fragmented. Siblings not speaking to one another. No one speaking to their dad. Anger at their stepmom. On a personal note, this was also a family who did not treat me as a rabbi very well. I can't help but wonder, had they been brought up inside a religion that insisted on respect for parents, for the importance of peace and honor in a family, even for respect for their teachers and rabbis, how different they might have turned out. You see, Judaism's spirituality cannot be separated from mitzvot, from deeds that help others. Brachas, blessings, are so powerful because they force us to stop and notice that we've been given gifts, and now we have a debt to repay. We must comfort the bereaved, visit and heal the sick, feed the hungry, make peace, and so on. What good is God? God is a continuing presence. God is sometimes, or religion is sometimes criticized as being a crutch. I think it's a perfect description of religion. If you've got a very bad leg, a crutch is a wonderful thing to have, and we are all indeed wounded. God is someone to pray to complain to explain to cry to scream at, to love, to hate, anything but to ignore. If we listen to God, if we open ourselves to God's Spirit, to God's touch, to God's love, we are never alone. I have a deep relationship with God, full of love, anger, argument, discussion, laughter, gifts that I understand, helping God's children, and gifts that I don't understand, fasting, praying, keeping kosher. This relationship has sustained me through the worst moments of my life and brought me some of life's best moments. What good is God? God is our teacher. God does not force us to do the right thing. God teaches us what the right things are, where our priorities should lie. Some may seem obvious, like don't steal, don't murder. But what about respect for parents, respect for teachers, respect for someone's feelings, and valuing their time? When bad things happen to good people, rather than blaming God or asking where is God, we need to ask, what has God asked us to do? Have we truly served as our brother's keepers? Are we allocating reasonable proportions of our assets to healing, to peacemaking, to helping the poor? Or are we perhaps overspending on war, self-indulgence, and entertainment? Do I really need several hundred channels on my TV? Do I really need to have iPod earphones in my ears 24/7? People dismiss the Bible and Torah so quickly, but virtually no one I've ever spoken to thinks that Torah is a purely human construct, or thinks that Torah is nonsense. No one I've ever spoken to that holds these ideas has ever seriously studied Torah deeply, and especially in Hebrew. What good is God? God is our strength and inspiration. I have seen God sustain people who have no hope, no strength, no reason to go on living. God inspire us through sacred texts and through teachings, but also through God's living image, people created B'Tselem Elohim in the image of God. In the book of Isaiah, we read that those who trust in Adonai will have their strength renewed. They will mount up with wings as eagles. They will run and not grow weary. I have seen this to be literally true, of parents surviving the death of a teenage son, of single moms pulling off impossible schedules and superhuman efforts, of a dying congregant continuing to volunteer help, helping others with what was literally her last breaths, and living far longer than any of her doctors thought she could possibly live. When people act and work in God's name, God gets the credit. And I mean this literally. Several times over the last few weeks, I've been visiting people literally who were dying. And I was there because of God. This is not something I would do if it was not for my Judaism. So I'm not certain in a scientific sense that God exists, but I am certain that God was with me in that room. And I am certain that I represented God, and that God was in that room because of my Judaism. The book of Isaiah quotes God as saying, I am Adonai and you are my witnesses. And the rabbis question that strange formulation And they say what God was really teaching us if we are not God's witnesses, then God is not really God. God cannot do God's work without us. What good is God? God brings us together in community. And I'll be talking more about that when I speak about religion. So ultimately, what good is God? God is the ultimate answer to the musical question, is that all there is? God affirms that there is much more to the destruction of a fire, the wonder of a child at a circus, to love and to life itself, than fleeting images and memories that are meaningless when over. God affirms that each child, each love, each life and each moment, whether at a circus with a child or at the bedside of a dying grandmother, has enduring, even cosmic significance. Imagine, for example, if the child at the circus that Peggy Lee sang about had been part of a church or a synagogue-led program to take less fortunate kids to the circus. Imagine her mom and dad leading her in evening prayers to thank God for the gift of attending a circus and reminding her and themselves to give back to the community. Yes, there ought to be more to a circus than souvenirs, memories, and stomachs upset by the cotton candy and the popcorn. God affirms that every act of ours counts, whether it is seen or not. That the little acts of kindnesses that we show to people, pets, and plants are important and counted. Feeling God's presence in the world and in your life makes both more beautiful. With a deep relationship with God, you need never be lonely or bored. You need never feel abandoned or unloved. But the relationship with God does not come free. In Judaism, it is not unconditional love. There are strings attached. The strings are the strings of the tzitzit, the strings of the talit. And in the Torah, we're taught to attach these strings to remind us of the commandments. Don't expect all of the miracles, wonders, joys, beauty, love, and comfort in your relationship to God to magically appear just because you ask for it, or maybe even think about God a few times a year. Like any relationship, your relationship with God takes work, time, and effort. My friends, if I could touch your life in just one way, it would be to ask that you be open to the beauty of a deep, serious relationship with God, in our case, through Judaism. Some of you may have other religious traditions. These ideas are not new and they are not mine. For literally thousands of years, sages far smarter than mine have struggled with the problems of life and living. There's a Hasidic story of a man who gets a telegram telling him that a relative has died and left him some valuable property. He was told to contact the rabbi for details. Excited, he went to the rabbi, only to be told the relative was Moses and the valuable property was a Jewish religious tradition. So the good news on this Erev Rosh Hashanah is that you are all heirs to an incredibly rich and valuable inheritance. I wish you a new year of health and sweetness and the wisdom necessary to truly appreciate and enjoy it.